Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum, to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass on Joy 94.9. Macca.
Thanks, Tass. Our next guest is Nick Rees. Nick is the Principal Fellow, Melbourne School of Government at the University of Melbourne, also a councillor at the City of Melbourne. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good morning, Macca, and good morning, Tass. Great to be with you on this sunny Sunday in ISO.
Now, sunny?
Well, you know. It's
all right. Sorry, did I say sunny? I said rainy Saturday.
Yes. Oh, right. Right. I thought you said sunny. I thought he's delusional.
Yeah.
Not in Melbourne.
So we wanted first off to talk to you about Stubbygate, and I reckon Christine Holgate, the CEO of Australia Post, she should actually change her name to Colgate so she can stop some of the decay in Australia Post.
Look, as a humble city councillor, it's not for
humble,
me to...
Humble, hang on.
Not to speak to the actions of the CEO of Australia Post, Christine Holgate, but I'm...
Come on, give us an insider's view, Nick.
...about what the City of Melbourne did. So I'm sure your listeners know the backstory here about, you know, the Kensington and Flemington flats being in lockdown during July. City of Melbourne was one of the agencies that took on responsibility for providing services on the ground there, including delivering of goods and parcels. And it came to our attention that there was a large number of parcels being delivered by the Pauline Hanson One Nation Party. And, of course, these deliveries were happening proximate to her being in the media, describing people living in the estate as drug addicts, alcoholics, not being able to speak English, haven't adhered to the rules, and essentially inferring that they have themselves to blame for the COVID-19 cluster in the estate. And so the City of Melbourne, we sought advice on whether or not it was permissible for us to deliver those parcels. We were aware that they did have stubby holders in them saying, "I've got the guts to say what you're thinking," which is her dog whistle, of course, catch cry to her supporters. And we sought legal advice and were advised that, in fact, a stubby with that message, those people in that context could be potentially be a breach of the Commonwealth Criminal Code.
Yes.
Because it was using the Postal Service to potentially menace, harm or cause offence.
So this is legal advice?
Yes.
You got legal advice?
We did indeed, Tass. And so armed with that advice, we elected to not proceed with the delivery of those parcels to people living in the estate. We advised Australia Post of that situation. We then received correspondence from the General Counsel at Australia Post, and I think it's now a matter of public record that Christine Holgate was copied into some of the emails around that, advising us that we were required to deliver on them. The legal back and forth went on for a number of days because we were not delivering them. And look, in the end, the role of the City of Melbourne in providing those services at that estate shifted as other service providers came in, and ultimately those parcels were returned to Australia Post by the City of Melbourne, and I believe ultimately they were returned to Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. And so here I can tell you what my opinion is. thankfully, they were never delivered to those people because it was like rubbing salt into the wound. Mm.
Well, you're not going to get any disagreement. You're not going to get any disagreement from Macca or I, but what I'm still interested in is what motivated the City Council to seek that advice. Clearly, it was in your agenda not to deliver them.
Look, we knew the contents of what was being delivered. We obviously knew the context in which they were delivering. You know, everyone had seen what Pauline Hanson had been out saying in the media about these people. And yes, we thought in all the circumstances we should get some advice because we thought they were menacing. They could cause harm. They would cause offence to people, particularly when they're at their most stressed out, their most vulnerable with a COVID cluster, and they're effectively in lockdown, as you'll recall, hard lockdown. And so, look, we took that legal advice. The legal advice was that it was it could potentially be a breach of the criminal code. That held us up from delivering the goods for a number of days, and then our role in the estate evolved, and ultimately the parcels went back to Australia Post.
We've got to go to a break, Nick. I think it's interesting. No break. I think it's interesting that Australia Post actually emailed the council. Obviously, they didn't post it because otherwise you wouldn't have got it.
Nick,
I don't mind saying that from as a City of Melbourne councillor, I am completely comfortable with what we did. We did become under some pressure from Australia Post to fulfil the delivery of those parcels. But in all the circumstances, I can sleep easy at night knowing that we sought advice and ultimately those parcels weren't delivered.
It could actually be interpreted, Nick, that if you had delivered the parcels, you were an accessory to the commission of an offence.
Well, indeed, and based on the advice we had, that was a risk that we thought was material.
Yeah.
And we're getting a lot of feedback from our listeners this morning, all supporting the action that the Melbourne City Council took. I haven't got one bit of negative feedback yet. Nick, we want to change topics.
To hear that. I mean, can I just make one point? The thing that really frustrates me about all this is I suspect Pauline Hanson enjoys all the publicity that she's getting around this issue. This all happened back in July. It's only just made into the media this week. I have no idea how it came into the media, but I can certainly tell you back in July, the City of Melbourne was not seeking any media around this. We just did these actions quietly, and our view was the less said, the better, publicly, frankly. And that goes to, I think, people like Pauline Hanson probably enjoy the controversy, and I suspect that some of the people that vote for her would still be thinking that all the things that she said about the people living in the flats were true.
Another message here from a listener, Nick. It says, good on you, Nick. Decent and humane. Okay, I think we want to change topics before we actually break for the news. We're interested in what's happening in the US. What's the latest with the Trump election?
Well, look, it's been another gigantic week on the
Trumptopian week, a Trumptopian
Orange week.
Yes, and of course, I love these conversations we have because every week I finish up saying, surely it can't get weirder than this, and inevitably it does. So this week we've had the legendary US journalist Bob Woodward release his new book called Rage, covering much of the Trump presidency and recent times. In it is the explosive claims that in an interview he did with Trump earlier this year, Trump said that he was publicly downplaying the severity of COVID-19 because he didn't want to create public panic. But in fact, he did think that COVID-19 was acute public health risk to the American people. So this has caused an absolute flurry of controversy. The accusation being that it was a dereliction of his duty to the American people to not act on his belief that it was, in fact, a very, very severe public health crisis that the American people were facing. And instead, of course, we all know now, we all remember him out there sort of saying that that it was nothing to be too concerned about. And so this has been running for days now in the US. Now, extraordinarily, Trump took to Twitter to defend...
Surprise, surprise.
What was in the new book. And again, his defence is just extraordinary. So he's come out and said, if Bob Woodward thought that these claims were so dangerous, why is he only reporting on this now? Why did he not report on it earlier? Of which begs the question, Bob Woodward is a great journalist, but he's not the President of the United States. The more fundamental question here is, as the leader of the country, why didn't you act on what were your beliefs back earlier in the year?
Yeah. And I mean, the other...
Well, you know, clearly he was saving it up.
Well, also, but he had to write it. You know, and he had...
Well, yes.
You know, and you know... Let me ask you this thing. How do you know when Donald Trump is lying?
I think I know the answer, but tell me, Macca.
When his lips move.
You've been saving that one up, Macca.
Oh, no. We're speaking with Nick Reese, and Nick, apart from being councillor at the City of Melbourne, is the Principal Fellow. Principal Fellow, I like that title. Principal Fellow. Melbourne School of Government, University of Melbourne. So, Nick, as we know, this is probably a little bit of a beltway question, but the residents of the District of Columbia, which is where Washington is, do not have representation in Congress. Now, there's a move by the Democrats for that to change. It's assumed or assessed that should that bill pass, that the District of Columbia would effectively be known as a state and would get two senators and a couple of congressmen. Those two senators could change the balance of power in the Senate for quite a long time on the basis that they're likely to be Democrat senators, aren't they?
There's no doubt they would be Democrat senators, Macca. DC is a very, very Democrat part of the United States. And in a finely balanced Congress, where you have two from each state, an additional two going one way would make a very significant difference. Of course, it would all depend on what the final electoral system is used for selecting those two congressmen. The US being a federation, they have different electoral systems in each jurisdiction. But you are right, that does have the potential to very significantly shift the balance of power in the US Congress.
So
the other big trend in US elections is what's going on in Texas. So
yes.
Over the years, Texas is great. The Latino population is continuing to grow and grow, and Latinos tend to vote lean towards Democrats rather than Republican. Texas is currently a Republican state. If it swings to the Democrats, that is 38 votes in a presidential race. And you'll almost lock in Democrat presidents for a decade when that state flips.
Now, of course, District...
And that's likely.
District of Columbia do elect a non-voting representative to the to the House of Representatives, but not to the Senate.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah.
The other very interesting thing coming up in the District of Columbia, in this provincial...
We're losing you, Nick.
You need to stand still.
Can you hear me?
Yes. So stand still. You are not allowed to move.
Am I coming through now?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
Great. What I was going to say is that in the Democrat vote, in the presidential vote in November, that's what we sort of see in Australia. But actually, there are lots of other local votes and ballots that are occurring. In the District of Columbia, they're voting on a proposal to decriminalise hallucinogenic plants. So that includes marijuana and magic mushrooms.
Well, probably be a good thing for the Congress.
Let's get to the important stuff.
Yeah. Get them all off their tits. They probably do better.
And in fact, that actually belies a broader trend in the US, which many of us miss in Australia. So notwithstanding what's going on in Washington with Donald Trump, at a local level, at a city level, at a state level in the US, there's actually great strides forward that have been made on progressive issues. So whether that's drug decriminalisation, marriage equality, broader social issues, at a city and local level, they have made big steps forward in recent years.
Now, Nick, just to change the topic slightly.
No, but hang on.
The
guy from KISS who said that Donald Trump is the strongest leader we've got, I think he must live in a state where they deregulated those substances.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Nick, tell us about the polls. What are the polls saying at the moment? Overall.
Look, we've been expecting the polls to tighten up as we get closer to Election Day. They normally do. But just looking at the polls this week, and I'm like a poll tragic, I need to confess to you both.
We know that.
They're actually holding quite firm for Joe Biden. So he's still got a 7 to 8 point lead on national polls, and he's still holding up quite well in those key Midwest states. And even in states like Florida and Arizona, he's definitely in the race. And the really interesting thing here, Macca and Tass, is that those numbers haven't really moved around a lot all year. So, in fact, there was some polling analysis done this week that showed that these polls are the least volatile since 1940. So almost all this year, Biden has had somewhere between a 6 and 8 point lead, notwithstanding the fact that there's been a pandemic, there's been massive civil unrest, you had two party conventions, and still that lead of 6 to 8% still seems to be holding for Biden.
We had a similar experience here with the last federal election, of course, Nick, where the polls consistently pointed in the one direction.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was not the result that everybody had expected. What do you think about that?
Yes, look, and obviously everybody is taking the polls in the US elections with a grain of salt because it was a very similar phenomena in 2016. In defence of the pollsters, they would say that they identified what was wrong with their polls last time. It was the weighting that they were giving to particular respondents in their polls, in particular non-college or university educated white voters in the US. They underweighted in their polls, and that caused them to not properly predict the strength of the Trump vote. And then there's a little bit of the silent Trump voter, which I believe gets overstated. But
now, I always ask you this, Nick. I always ask you this. What do you think will happen on Election Day?
Well, look, I'm still predicting a Biden victory. And the reason for that is because this election has become a referendum on Trump's handling of COVID-19. And I think that's still going to be the case come November. I still think the US will be in the grip of COVID-19 come November. And, people can see that clearly he has failed his country in his response to this crisis.
6 million infected people, 200,000 dead and rising. And that's only what's been reported, of course.
Yes. I mean, I think before COVID-19, it was looking very competitive. And I would have thought Trump would probably win. You know, he had this slogan of promises made, promises kept. And he could point to a lot of things that he said he was going to do. And we might think they were crazy, but he went on and did them. But now with COVID-19, it has just trumped everything in American public discourse. And yes, I just think for that reason he's going to fall short, and we'll see a Biden president.
Well, we'll look forward to what happens now, in the next couple of weeks.
Really quick, Tass will disapprove, but I made a couple of bets earlier in the year, and if I win, the money goes to Joy. So Tass doesn't approve of gambling, but for $5 on Biden, if he wins, I'll get $7. $5 on Trump, if he wins, I get $13.75. Mike Pence, $5, I get $500. Elizabeth Warren, she's out. Joe Biden as the overall election winner, 5 to get 25. Bernie Sanders, oh, well, I've done my dough there. And Donald Trump is actually lower down. So there's a number of bets there, depending on the margin and stuff. But I got in early. And either way, Joy's going to come out ahead.
There you go, Nick.
It's not Joy's money I'm using. It's my money.
There you go, Nick. thank you for your time this morning.
I certainly wouldn't be writing off Donald Trump.
No, not too early for that, I think.
$13 doesn't look too bad a bet.
It's too early, I agree. Nick, we're out of time, unfortunately. We can always wrap it on for the entire morning. But enjoy the rest of your day. Regards to your very gorgeous family. And
stay near the radio, because coming up right next is Stephen Duckett. I know you want to listen to that.
I will do. Thank you, Tess. Thank you, Macca.
Cheers.
All the best.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.